Welcome. This is Marcia for Radio Eye, and today I will be reading National Geographic Magazine, dated April 2023. As a reminder, Radio Eye is a reading service intended for people who are blind or have other disabilities that make it difficult to read printed material. Please join me now for the continuation of the article I began last time titled, Nigeria, Where Population is Growing, by Adaobi Trisha Nwangbangi. When my 30-minute slot is over, he asks me to wait for a few hours so that he can show me some of his farms on the outskirts of town. He takes me to a greenhouse roughly the size of a soccer field, where I dip my shoe soles in disinfectant and put on a white lab coat. Obasanjo plucks a ripe tomato and takes a bite, then offers me a fresh one to taste. "A diet of just this and some vegetables, and your body will shine," he says. During his 4 decades in professional farming, his Obasanjo Farms conglomerate has spread across the country, including not just greenhouses, but also granaries, aquaculture, poultry, and processing plants. "This is what science and technology has done," he says, explaining some of the latest advancements his farms employ, such as using ground coconut husks to enhance soil, which boosts water retention, among other advantages. "Our population is increasing. We need to ensure that our productivity also keeps increasing." Obasanjo made another policy push to revive agriculture when he returned to office in 1999. Momentum carried over into subsequent administrations, and young people rallied to join the national effort to reinvent Nigerian agriculture. Then came the pandemic, along with widespread violence, and things went awry. During the COVID-19 lockdowns, people began robbing trucks hauling food, says Mazuo Nwaneli, co-founder of Sahel Capital, an agriculture investment firm. Hunger spiked, kidnapping spiked. That spike in crime has made it harder to farm. In the past 2 years, armed gunmen on motorbikes have kidnapped thousands of people in Nigeria for ransom. The staff of prosperous agricultural enterprises have been particularly targeted, forcing many farms to abandon or reduce operations. Many of Nigeria's largest farms are in the fertile northern region. In March 2022, in the northwest state of Kebbi, several people were killed in an exchange of gunfire between security agents and bandits who attacked the premises of GB Foods, the country's second largest tomato processing plant. Nationwide, more than 350 farmers were kidnapped or killed in the 12 months up to June 2022 alone. Nwaneli says guards must escort workers to and from farms his company invests in. "Under such a specter of fear," he tells me, "you cannot run a company's operations." As Nigeria's population grows, the rising insecurity, especially in the north, is Kenneth's greatest concern for his family. It's also the reason he's usually away from home, leaving Iziaku alone with her mother and sister. About a year after the couple got married, he was transferred from the southern city of Enugu farther north to Jos, the scene of several violent incidents over the past 2 decades. Kenneth was reluctant to move his family there with him. The nearest safe place he could think of was Abuja, more than 150 miles away. "I'm not saying Abuja is totally safe, but it is safer than anywhere else in the north," Kenneth says. "So I decided that they should stay here while I stay in Jos, so that whenever it is time to run from danger, I know that I'm running alone instead of carrying my family with me." Amara spends a lot of time whispering prayers over Iziaku, Bible passages she has memorized. "The Lord will cause his face to shine upon you," she says. "You shall continually lie in green pastures." She holds the baby's tiny hands and feet and talks to her. "You will not be like me. You will not struggle," she says, believing in the power of positive words to shape a child's future. Iziaku is Igbo for good wealth, and among Amara's prayers is that her daughter's name ends up being prophetic. "I know we work hard and there is dignity in labor, but there are still times when favor supersedes your hard work," Amara says. "My prayer for her is that she will not struggle in this life, whether in Nigeria or anywhere she finds herself. Her hands will not struggle to open doors. She will just meet open doors. When Izayaku turns 34, her mother's age when she was born, the world's 9 billionth baby will have long since arrived, and number 10 billion will be just a few years away. Will there be enough food for everybody by that time, I wonder, Amara says. But I believe that Izayaku will be outstanding, no matter the number of persons in the world. Next article, China, where population is shrinking, by Brooke Larmer and Jane Zhang. China has been the most populous country for centuries, but India will surge to the top this year as China's population begins a perilous decline. What happens when a nation passes the tipping point? It's early autumn in central China, and the streets of Qingqinzi's village are turning into gold. Thousands of husked corn cobs lie in orderly rectangles in front of homes, their kernels drying in the sun. The harvest is one of the heartbeats of rural life in Anhui province, a constant that Ding, 35, has known since childhood. Yet few other rhythms remain. Except for the corn, the streets are almost empty. Houses have been abandoned. The sense of children have faded, and for years Ding struggled to find a wife. Few young women still live in the village. Fewer still would marry a welder unable to buy a house or pay a bride price. My family is not rich, Ding says. Standing in her yard shucking corn, Ding's aunt bemoans the plight of what she calls leftover men. The village has dozens of bachelors in their 30s and 40s, she says, lonely men like Ding, whose hopes for love and family collided with an unrelenting force, China's demographic upheaval. After decades of a plunging birth rate, the country has begun an irreversible population decline that will reverberate throughout China and around the world for decades to come. Repercussions can already be felt in places like Anhui, where Ding's search for a wife was also hindered by an acute gender imbalance. Around the time of his birth, 131 boys were born for every 100 girls in Anhui, a reflection of a traditional bias for sons exacerbated by Beijing's now-discarded one-child policy. Today, China has a surplus of about 30 million men, more than half of marrying age. The brutal mathematics threatened to squeeze Ding out of a marriage market. When he proposed to his first girlfriend, her parents balked because he couldn't afford a new house. Ding's parents scrounged for loans to buy a car and renovate an apartment in a nearby city for the sole purpose of attracting a wife. The bride price, a dowry paid to the wife's family, would cost roughly $29,000. Even meeting a prospect's parents can run $2,500. Over the years, a matchmaker was able to coax only a handful of women to go on blind dates with Ding. Humiliated by his failure, Ding began avoiding family gatherings. They were unbearable, he says, his relatives fixated on one topic, his lamentable status as a bare branch, the Chinese expression for a man who adds no fruit to the family tree. A population shortage in a country of more than 1.4 billion people may seem paradoxical. China's sense of identity and strength has been tied throughout its history to the staggering size of its population. When Emperor Qin Shi Huang ordered 1 million laborers to build the Great Wall in the year 221 BC, the grandiose endeavor befitted a dynasty that made up more than a quarter of the world's people. 2 millennia later, China's emergence as a 21st century superpower has been fueled by its seemingly limitless supply of workers, hundreds of millions of whom have migrated to cities. China now has 153 urban areas with a population estimated at more than 1 million. The United States has 50. 4 decades of dizzying economic growth has given China the aura of an unstoppable juggernaut powered by a population roughly equal in size to 7 Nigerias, 42 Perus, or 140 Swedens. But China has reached a tipping point. Even by the government's own reckoning, its population shrank last year, the beginning of a long fall that demographers predict will persist for the rest of the century. The main reason China's birth rate has plummeted to its lowest level since the founding of the People's Republic in 1949. Over the past 7 years alone, the number of births has fallen by almost half, from 18 million in 2016 to 9.6 million in 2022. Even if the birth rate stabilizes, experts say, China's population will still fall 50% or more by 2100, when it might be only half as big as India's and comparable in size to Nigeria's. The last time China's population fell was during the cataclysmic famine of the Great Leap Forward, Mao Zedong's ill-fated industrialization campaign of the early 1960s, when some 30 million people died of starvation. This time the drop has been triggered not by famine, war, or catastrophe, but by rapid social and economic changes, the rising costs of getting married and raising children, and the restrictive one-child policy. As if to mark the moment, China's centuries-long reign as the world's most populous nation will come to an end this year, with India surging past it into the top position. The fallout goes far beyond a symbolic changing of the guard. China's shrinking population will likely slow or even halt the country's seemingly inexorable march to global economic preeminence, even as it eases pressure on the planet's environment. How will an already contracting workforce support an elderly population that is expected to nearly double over the next quarter century? And how will Beijing encourage births after suppressing them for more than 3.5 decades? This is an unprecedented historical decline, says Wang Feng, a sociologist at the University of California, Irvine. By the end of the century, China will be quite unrecognizable in terms of what we know about China's history and position in the world. China is not the only nation teetering on the population precipice. Falling birth rates and rising life expectancies have become hallmarks of industrialized urban economies, a combination that has turned demographic pyramids upside down from East Asia to Western Europe. China is roaring down a path being forged by its aging neighbors, Japan and South Korea. In 2021, South Korea had the world's lowest fertility rate at 0.81 children per woman. China was not far behind at 1.16, barely half the replacement rate needed to maintain a stable population. China's predicament, though, is uniquely daunting, not just by dint of its size and global influence, but also by an unwelcome distinction. It will likely become the first country to grow old before it gets rich. Despite its emergence as the world's second largest economy, China's gross domestic product, GDP, per capita is still less than 40% of Japan's and 20% of the U.S.'s. The breakneck speed of China's transformation pushed it toward the tipping point faster than other countries, but the one-child policy also proved to be an accelerant. Launched in 1980 to stave off a population boom, the program ended up hastening the arrival of the opposite result. Beijing dropped the policy in 2016, but the birth rate has continued to plummet. On a planet whose population has doubled in the past 50 years, the burning question for China and more developed nations may seem strange. How can they avert a demographic collapse? Beijing is scrambling for answers. China's supreme leader, Xi Jinping, has vowed to improve the population development strategy and establish a policy system to boost birth rates. Dealing with a demographic implosion will require more than another bout of social engineering. In China, it could even force a reckoning on such thorny issues as gender equality, immigration, elder care, and the limits of high technology. No country has ever solved this problem, says Yong Kai, a demographer at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. This is a new chapter yet to be written for the human race. Sasha Yu's parents, both farmers, cursed her for being a girl. I never should have given birth to you, she says her mother told her. Yu's only happy memory from growing up in rural Shandong province was the time she fell off a horse cart and woke up in the hospital to find her mother gently fanning her. So rare was that moment of tenderness, she says, I was reluctant to open my eyes. Despite her dismal childhood, Yu did everything she could to win her parents' approval. Among the first in her family to graduate from college, Yu rode the crest of China's economic boom, landing a lucrative banking job and paying off her parents' crippling loans. It was not enough. When Yu reached her late 20s, her mother berated her for bringing shame on the family by not being married and having children. Ever dutiful, Yu found a suitable boyfriend, a fellow banker with money and manners. All I wanted was to prove myself to my parents, she says. but China's economic transformation and U-Zone changed her attitude toward marriage and children, as it has for millions of educated, upwardly mobile Chinese women and many men. I broke the tether of my parents' traditional values, Yu says. Moving to Shanghai, she joined one of the fastest urbanizations in human history. 65% of Chinese now live in cities, up from 20% in 1980. She split up with her boyfriend, rented and renovated an apartment, and began living on her own. The idea of marriage and children no longer seemed inevitable, but rather a potential barrier to freedom and success. I look at my parents' and friends' marriages, Yu says dryly, and I see nothing to envy. Sasha Yu and Ding Jingzi are on opposite sides of China's socioeconomic spectrum. Together, though, they help reveal why China's marriage and birth rates have tumbled to their lowest levels in decades. In 2021, China registered 7.6 million marriages, a 43% drop from its 2013 peak, and the eighth consecutive year of decline. The change is driven partly by the gender imbalance and soaring marriage costs that thwarted Ding, but social scientists say it also reflects China's fast-rising levels of education, wealth, and urbanization, along with, as in Yu's case, the assertion of women's rights and autonomy. The COVID-19 pandemic and recurring lockdowns pushed the numbers down even further. In late 2021, China's Communist Youth League conducted a survey of 18 to 26-year-olds and found that 44% of women and 25% of men were unsure if they would marry. The percentages were highest for young women, who, like you, live in China's most modern cities. So disconcerting were the numbers to China's leaders that the Youth League has taken on the role of Cupid, staging icebreakers and love train journeys to help single comrades find a spouse. Yu almost got married twice, but now at 35, she hangs out mostly with other professional women like herself. Strong, independent, single. It took Yu years of self-exploration to get over the shame of not being married and to gain, she says, a broader vision of the possibilities in life. Her parents, however, still haven't accepted that neither Yu nor her older sister is married. Back in Shandong, neighbors shamed the couple so much that they, too, felt compelled to move out of their home village. To understand the sheer speed of China's population reversal, it helps to turn the clock back to the 1970s, when much of the world was gripped by a Malthusian panic over the looming population explosion. The sense of peril was especially strong in China, where Mao for years had exhorted his people to produce more babies to make the motherland strong. China's new leaders under Deng Xiaoping feared the fast-expanding population would destroy the tendrils of economic growth and lead to another famine. China was so poor in the 1970s that the leaders worried, how are we going to feed the masses? How are we going to make the economy grow 7% per year? UNC's Kai says, the fastest way was to limit the number of mouths to feed. That logic led to the social engineering experiment that for 36 years would impinge on the most intimate decisions of Chinese families. China's leaders have claimed without clear evidence that the one-child policy prevented more than 400 million births, sparing the planet an enormous environmental burden and sparking the sustained economic boom that would lift more than 750 million Chinese out of poverty, according to the World Bank. The policy's legion of critics, meanwhile, point to evidence that its intrusive restrictions resulted in millions of forced sterilizations, sex-selective abortions, and infanticides, and created an unbalanced population with too many men, too many older adults, and too few young people. Demographers raise another question. Was the one-child policy even necessary? China's fertility rate had already been falling sharply, from almost 6 children per woman in 1970 to less than 3 in 1980, the year the policy was implemented. Nearly 75% of China's fertility decline came before the one-child policy went into effect, says Wang of UC Irvine. China, moreover, was primed for an economic explosion once it opened to the world, powered by an enormous young workforce, a dividend of the Mao-era baby boom. The country raced to become, in a single generation, the world's factory. Even without the one-child policy, Wang says, the economic boom and population decline would have come, albeit more slowly, more manageably, and without the gender inequalities that deepen the crisis today. China's leaders, however, stuck with the program until long after warning signals started flashing. China reached below replacement fertility rates in the early 1990s, Wang explains, so this has been getting worse for decades. When Beijing finally jettisoned the one-child policy in 2016, there was an expectation that pent-up desires for larger families would spark a new baby boom. No such luck. After a slight uptick, the number of births continued to nosedive. Pandemic lockdowns and the economic slowdown only accelerated the fall, as Kai says, adding snow to frost. In 2021, just weeks after new census figures revealed another steep drop in the birth rate, Beijing unveiled a new approach. The three-child policy is here, trumpeted a state media headline. Would you like to give birth? An online poll conducted by the state-run Xinhua News Service did not bode well. Of the first 30,500 respondents, 28,000 reportedly said they would never consider having three children. The poll quickly disappeared from the website, but the skepticism that greeted the patriotic campaign could no longer be hidden. If people can't afford one or two children, asks demographer Xu Jianping of Australia's Victory University, how could they afford to have three? Scarlett Kai and her husband might seem like ideal candidates for the next baby boom. In their sleek Shanghai apartment, the affluent young couple already dote on three dependents of the feline variety as they dance around the question of children. Over the years, Kai's mother has warned her about dual-income, no-kids couples, dinks in the parlance, who tried to have children too late. The last time her mother nagged her, Kai, who is now 36, erupted, I'm not living my life only to give birth to a child. Still, the couple have weighed the pros and cons. Spiraling costs are one obstacle in a competitive environment where parents feel pressure to spend lavishly on their children. An estimate from 2019 put the average price tag for raising a child at $76,000, seven times China's GDP per capita. In Shanghai, the cost was twice that. The expense doesn't trouble Kai as much as the investment of time and energy and the invasion of privacy. I can't adapt to a living space with an extra person, she says. For a long time, Kai saw the decision not to have children as a sort of feminist rebellion. Growing up, she saw many women marry young, quit their jobs, and lose their identities in children and chores. Since I was a girl, I've seen too many invisible women, she says. I always wondered, why does it have to be this way? She read Simone de Beauvoir, studied philosophy, and found in her husband a kindred spirit. Over the years, my husband and I reached a consensus, she says. Human beings don't have an absolute need to reproduce. But last minute, Kai felt unbidden a vague longing for a child, moved by the especially hard toll the long zero-COVID lockdowns took on the elderly. She found comfort in the thought of growing older with a son or daughter, someone close to us. That feeling disappeared in December, though, when the government's sudden lifting of the lockdown policy led to the lightning-fast spread of COVID and chaos at hospitals. If we try to have a baby now, the risk would be too big, the pressure too great, she says. For the good of the child, it's better not to bring him or her into the world. The pensioners gather every morning under sycamore trees in a Shanghai park. A circle of gray-haired women often dances in unison to a tinny song emanating from a portable speaker. Another group moves silently through the flowing motions of Tai Chi. A man with a large calligraphy brush sometimes writes poems on the paving stones with water, his masterful strokes visible only briefly before they disappear. One recent day, a 69-year-old retiree sat on a park bench, watching her fellow seniors finish their exercises. The woman, who said her surname was Dong, but declined to provide her given name, had toiled for decades in a plastic manufacturing plant, one of the workers who powered the early years of China's industrial expansion. She now spends most of her time caring for her granddaughter, bringing her to and from school, and cooking her dinner every day. If I don't help my daughter look after the kid, Dong says, she won't be able to work. As a token of gratitude, her daughter pays her $300 a month. Dong represents the convergence of two of China's most disturbing trend lines, the shrinking labor pool and the exploding elderly population. Because of the declining birth rate, There are fewer and fewer young workers to replace people like Dong, who retired at 50. China's workforce started contracting nearly a decade ago, and demographers predict it will lose nearly 150 million workers by 2040. The ranks of the elderly, meanwhile, are expected to grow by more than 200 million, from 13% of the population today to nearly a third by 2050. It's not just the bubble of baby boomers hitting retirement age. China's older adults, as the Shanghai park goers show, are staying healthier and living longer. Life expectancy in China has risen from 55 in 1970 to about 78 today, even higher than in the U.S. It's a sign of great progress, but creates a conundrum. How can China support a super-aging society? China's once sprawling families have telescoped into 4-2-1 structures, four grandparents and two parents with a single child. Though well-suited for raising a child and building wealth, this arrangement becomes a top-heavy burden as family members grow old, a microcosm of the country's broader challenge. China's estimated 150 million only children, raised by six caregivers, will suddenly be responsible for supporting some or all of them. This dynamic is dragging down the economy as a smaller workforce struggles to prop up the pension and healthcare systems required by the expanding older population. The Chinese Academy of Social Sciences estimates that the social pension for urban employees could run out by 2035. Even if policies change, the Academy warns, the demographic deficit is bound to bring very unfavorable socioeconomic consequences. What has long seemed inevitable, China surpassing the U.S. as the world's largest economy, is receding into the future. It may never happen at all. What can China do? Given the demographic forces already in motion, there will be no way to avoid a sharp population drop. That is not all bad for the planet. It could help in the fight against climate change and ease pressure on China's environment and overcrowded cities. Even so, Beijing is desperate to mitigate the economic impacts that could prevent China from achieving Xi's goal of common prosperity. The simplest remedy, one that helps the United States avoid its own demographic peril, is immigration. China, however, has one of the lowest immigration rates in the world. It has fewer than a million foreign-born people, just 0.06% of its population, and offers no viable path to citizenship. The U.S., by contrast, has 45 million foreign-born residents, around 14% of the population. The barriers to immigration in China's largely homogeneous society are so high that there is only one place where non-Chinese immigration occurs, in the countryside, where thousands of women from Vietnam, Myanmar, and North Korea have been brought in, many illicitly, to become the brides of rural bachelors. This concludes readings from National Geographic magazine for today. Your reader has been Marcia. If you've enjoyed hearing this content, please give us a call at 859-422-6390. Thank you for listening and have a great day.